Welcome to episode 78 of the Rugby League Republic podcast with your hosts Tish and Dr. T. In this episode, we discuss the major fallout from the Manly Sea Eagles salary cap scandal, the impact of poor refereeing in the opening rounds of the NRL, who is shaping up as contenders for the New South Wales Blues Origin squad, and our tips for round four of the NRL, the Easter round. Join us as we build a rugby league community for all. The Rugby League Republic podcast starts right now. Welcome to episode 78 of the Rugby League Republic podcast, where we aim to build an online rugby league community for everybody. Each week, we bring you the everyday fan's perspective on the biggest news and issues in the world of rugby league, and we break it all down for you in our own unique way. I'm your co-host, Dr. T. Joining me is a very happy Tish. Well, not so happy. Tigers didn't go 3-from-3, but you're still pretty happy, Tish, with their performance, surely.
Oh, yes, absolutely, Dr. T. I am happy. I'm happy that Rugby League is doing so well. We've had some three awesome rounds, upsets, drama, close games, not so close games, in just the first three rounds, lots of penalties, and it's been fantastic. Great. We've even got our first major scandal of the year as well. So, yeah, everything's going fantastic in the NRL. Obviously bitterly disappointed by losing the game the way we lost it. And then I found out that the Brisbane Broncos, they were also tampering with the ball, Dr. T. They were also tampering with the ball, so maybe bringing shame that can never be repaid back to rugby league for their ball tampering, but... Anyway, Dr. T, how are you doing? How's life as a Parramatta fan in 2018?
Look, I'll tell you what. Just when I thought, I got to say, it's disappointing what's happening. We did manage to turn a 54-point, loss into just a 10-point loss. So, fellas, at this rate, next week we'll win by 30 points because... I don't know. There's something.
Well, you're up against the Tigers who have they haven't had a try scored against them since round two. Brisbane weren't able to score against them a try. So there you go.
Well, that says something. Well, they're not. I don't think the Eels will go much better. So. Bring out all our sharpshooters because we're going to need some goal kicking, for all the penalties that the Tigers give away. There's a lot happening. I think we should get stuck into it. But before we do, let's do a bit of a recap of the round three results in the NRL. So we've got the first match was Storm and Cowboys. Storm won 30-14. Bulldogs won a close one against the Panthers 20-18 in controversial circumstances. And in even more controversial circumstances, the Broncos 9-7 against the Tigers in Golden Point. The Warriors 20-19 against the Raiders. Was that in Golden Point as well, I think?
I think they just avoided Golden Point.
They just avoided Golden Point. So, not surprising when you've got these weird, odd numbers in the scores. Rabbitohs 34-6 against the Sea Eagles, against the Tide, and Sharks 14-4 against the Eels. Dragons 54-8 against the Titans. And the Roosters in a grudge match of the round, defeating the Knights, the Mitchell Pearce-led Knights, 38-8. So, look, those were the scores. We'll go into some of those scores and a bit more, delve into some of the issues that came out of all this in the six tackles. So, shall we get right into the six tackles?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, number one. Well, the biggest news of the week in the sporting landscape, of course, was how unimaginative the cheaters are in the NRL. We couldn't even come up with a ball tampering scandal. It seems to always be ho-hum, a salary cap scandal. And this time, it's Manly Warringah Sea Eagles who are to blame. And they have been busted for being way over the cap. And this has to do with the third-party payment breaches. And the NRL has been investigating this for quite some time. Manly have been fined $750K, and restrictions are going to be placed on their salary cap for next year. And look, a lot of people are actually saying, Tish, that the punishments don't go far enough. They're not losing any points this year at all. They're just getting fined. The nature or the volume of the breaches was higher than, I think, the Eels. It was for a more prolonged period. It led to a significant sort of news story. You will remember we talked about a couple of years ago the infamous Daly Cherry Evans backflip,
mm-hmm.
where he was all signed, sealed, and delivered for the Titans, and then some mysterious 11th hour dodgy backroom deals were done, and all of a sudden he's back in the Sea Eagles nest and about to play out his career with a, what was it, a 10-20 year deal, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Completely out of nowhere, and now all those kind of dodgy deals are being called into question because who knows what they offered him and whether that particular deal was the reason or could have contributed to some of the breaches that they've been found to have been engaged in. So a lot of people are saying Manly, you know, slap on the wrist. However, you know, as usual, the Manly, some of the Manly sort of legends of the game, no less than Bob Fulton, immortal himself, have decided to make this all about themselves. So rather than look at how they got off scot-free compared to the other teams that have been busted over the years, like Melbourne and Canterbury and Parramatta, he's decided to whinge and moan about Todd Greenberg not giving him, you know, not contacting him personally to tell him about what was about to go down with the NRL findings. And, you know, as usual, Tish, you know, Manly tending to make it all about themselves rather than look at the fact that they, you know, they've in terms of the punishment, they've got off a bit scot-free. Tish, what are your thoughts on the kind of sad situation that's unfolding?
Yeah, well, interesting that you've raised some very interesting points there, Dr. T. First of all, in the press conference, you know, Todd Greenberg, when he was announcing all the sanctions and all the penalties that the Manly Sea Eagles will have to face, he talked about how they need to be hard, they need to be tough against salary cap cheats. And, you know, as he's saying that, he's actually, you know, reading out, you know, basically, essentially like a get out of jail free card in my eyes, compared to what some of the other punishment has been with other clubs. And this is actually over a 5-year period and involves at least 13 player contracts, which, you know, in terms of other salary cap, scandals, I don't think they've been as lengthy as 5 years. Like, 5 years is an enormous amount of time. And as you're right, it doesn't call into question the Cherry Evans backflip saga of, I think it was 2013 or 14, some time ago. And it calls into question quite a lot of reasons why Manly, for instance, why did Manly get off so lightly? Another interesting thing that I read about this is that originally it was actually the New South Wales Police Force who were investigating Manly on match-fixing allegations that they stumbled across inconsistencies, that's it, of their books when it came to match payments, and then pass that information on to the NRL. So the original investigation, which has been going on ever since Jeff Tuvey has been calling for it, you know, for about 18 months, has you know, started off on match fixing allegations. So there's quite a lot of things that happened. You know, Bob Fulton, he is a legend of the game. He is actually an immortal. So, you know, he probably doesn't want his reputation to be associated with this scandal. And maybe he's got no part to play in it. So probably that's where, you know, he's probably being a little emotional, which I can understand. And, you know, when your club goes through some tough times, you know, sometimes you kind of, you know, there are some casualties, there are some, you know, they sort of get hit, and I think that probably Bob Fulton feels that way. But, you know, if he didn't say anything, nobody would have said anything about Bob Fulton anyway, right? So,
that's so right.
He kind of brought it on himself, so that's good.
I've got to say, can I just chime in just 1 second?
Yep.
It's very ironic, I think, and funny in a way that he's used the phrase, "I've been thrown under the bus," when you remember he made that infamous comment about Bill Harrigan being hit by a cement truck
yes.
You know, many years ago. So, you know, very, very funny. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, Bob Fulton, maybe transport industry is maybe where he's heading these days with all these transport references. But look, yeah, that's probably all I've got to say. You know, I think they should have at least lost some competition points, and then the reality is, if they've been doing it for 5 years, you know, I'd like to see why did the NRL stop at 5 years? I mean, potentially this could have been going on for a lot longer than that. I mean, there's a 2011 premiership, which is outside the 5 year period, but the reality is that could also be associated with this. I suppose we really don't know how long they've been cheating for and the circumstances behind that. So I think the NRL, I think the rugby league fans who are following this story do need to get a few more answers from the NRL about exactly what the breaches are. And also, I do think the players do have a certain responsibility to know what their contracts are and to sort of, you know, maybe to question some of the aspects of their contract. Because I think if 13 players at least knew about it, like, I mean, Cherry Evans, for instance, you know, in his situation, it did not look like that Manly could even match the offer of the Titans. But all of a sudden, they suddenly did with a very attractive offer. And, you know, as a player, you know, sort of understanding that he's playing a, you know, in a competition that has a salary cap, surely he would have thought to himself, this may not be 100% on the up and up. So I think players do need to take some responsibility with the contracts they actually that they sign. What are your thoughts on that?
I have to disagree.
Okay.
I agree that it would be good if they take responsibility in general.
Yeah.
But not. I mean, what do you expect them to do in this situation? Like, they're about to throw a heap of money at you to keep you for life, so you can stay with the club that you basically were blooded from and all that kind of stuff. What are you going to do, turn around and go, I'm going to make a phone call to the NRL integrity unit, because I think I'm a bit suspicious how they threw in an extra set of steak knives where they clearly cannot afford it.
Yeah.
Gold, platinum and gold plated steak knives that they cannot afford. No, I think the responsibility lies with those who are actually managing the books. To actually, you know, but it actually raises another question, which we probably need to talk about another day. But the question I have is, you know, on the scale of things that are classified as cheating, you know, this salary cap thing keeps coming out again and again. And often it is for, you know, with the exception, I think, of the Melbourne situation, where it was a very deliberate, you know, kind of attempt to keep the four biggest stars of the game in the one club at the time. You know, you can sort of see why the argument that, you know, it's a bit confusing, and sometimes it is a blurred line regarding, you know.
I do agree with that. It's not clear cut, is it?
Well, the third-party payments thing is a real problem, and despite the fact that you know, you can have an argument about whether it makes sense to most people, what is classified as dodgy. It's usually if there's a conflict of interest or if there's a guarantee from the club or from the third-party sponsor. It's hard to prove that, and it's hard for a player or other people to sort of know for sure that there hasn't been some guarantee in the back room that makes it look like it's an extra payment directly from the club. However, the other more important question I have is, what is the point of policing and limiting these incomes at all? You know, I know that there's a purpose of the salary cap. I know we've talked about this before, but I think the solution lies in potentially deregulating and freeing up some of our, you know, and that's not to say that I'm at all absolving Manly of the blame, but there is another conversation that we have to have, which is, you know, why have a salary cap at all? I mean, it wasn't. We saw some of the greatest years in rugby league history during a time when there was no salary cap at all.
Tigers and Parramatta, though.
Well, for Parramatta, yes, but no. You know, let's not forget it. The salary cap, I think, came in 1990. I think it was. Mm. So that's when the Canberra Raiders started their run, and you know, within 5 years then we had the Super League War. So prior to that, it was a free-for-all. There was no salary cap, and you know, we had some quite, you know, great dynasties of football teams and all that sort of stuff, great memories, great some of the greatest grand finals ever. And then we started to become a more socialist kind of, let's level the playing field and everyone has to have the same, you know, and then all these questions about the restriction of trade and you know, the players not getting what they deserve and the limitation and what their earnings are, all these issues stem from not very long ago. It was only like a generation ago, you know. So let's have that conversation as well as talking about what the fact that Manly got off with a slap on the wrist. We do need to talk about that, but probably we should reserve that for another time.
Yeah.
But I'll give you the last word on this, Tish.
No more points. You've changed me around. I do agree with you. Players do not take responsibility for your contracts.
That's right. They can barely put two and two. They can barely count to six tackles. So let's,
that's right.
let's not assume that they can understand what. Well, even we're talking about this. Even what other players are earning, they don't really know that. They don't talk about that necessarily. So yeah, and also if they do think something suspicious is going on, are they really going to rat out a mate to the NRL integrity unit? I really doubt it. So anyway, that's my thoughts on that. So, all right, let's move on to the next tackle number two. All right, we love talking about the serious topics today. The referees are ruining the NRL, or are they? So once again, some of the games in round three were marred by poor refereeing decisions. We had Sticky Stewart come out and blast the referee. Well, not really blast. He was trying to be a bit diplomatic more than he usually is in the Raiders' loss to the who did they lose to, the Warriors. But really, the key problem we saw happening again with the Tigers and the Broncos, some very blatant and obvious mistakes were made, which led directly to the Broncos winning. With a penalty in Golden Point extra time. And look, as a result of that, the latest news we have is that the two referees who officiated that controversial clash have been demoted. So Matt Noyan, who was the assistant referee, has been demoted this weekend to touch judge duties. And Ashley Klein has been demoted from head referee to assistant referee for whatever match he's assigned to this weekend. So, you know, the NRL for once has actually acted swiftly and not only that, they did actually come out. I think the referee's boss came out and acknowledged that it was a mistaken penalty. And just for those who aren't aware, the Tigers basically lost the game because they were incorrectly penalised for one of the players not being square at the marker during a very sort of critical time of the game in Golden Point and a critical part of the field. However, you know, not much earlier, the very same thing happened in reverse. You had players that were deliberately blocking the Tigers' attempt at field goal, when the Broncos attempted their field goal, blocking some of the chasers, the defenders of the Tigers coming in, which, you know, you could also argue that that was kind of illegal. So you've got, you know, ironically, both teams were doing these things, and yet only the Tigers were penalised, and that penalty directly led to a loss. So the NRL did actually apologise and said, look, they made a mistake, but that's little comfort to Tigers fans, isn't it, Tish?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it is little comfort. You know, I suppose, you know, whether it's not so much the Tigers losing. I mean, that is hard. But the reality is, I mean, it was in Golden Point. The first half of the Golden Point 5-minute period had already finished. Now we're into the second half. There's been absolutely no penalties blown in the Golden Point time. And, you know, the Broncos missed the field goal and then got that penalty and then kicked the goal. Since they missed the field goal and it went out into touch, we would have got a 7th tackle set. Obviously, a 7th tackle set is a good advantage to have, particularly when you're just trying to get down the field to kick a field goal. We may have not gone down the field. We may have not even kicked the field goal. But at least the Tigers would have been the masters of their own destiny. And at least the Broncos could also win the game based on their ability to withstand, you know, the Tigers' raid into the into their half of the field. So I think from both teams, I think they both would have been disappointed that the result of the game was not determined by any of their skill, but it was actually more decided upon by a referee and their penalty. And the reality is, I mean, there were probably occasions in Golden Point, you know, in this particular game where they could have kicked it, where they could have penalised either team, but they, you know, but I think the referees chose not to because they wanted the players to make a decision, and this penalty or players to decide the outcome of the game, and this penalty I think came out of nowhere. I think everybody was really quite stunned. I don't know, maybe the referees got a little tired. you know, from the long, exhausting game, and as a result, they just decided to blow a penalty. But look, as all rugby league fans know, this season there has been a major crackdown on, you know, the 10-meter rule, as well as the play the ball. They're making sure that the play the ball is actually working properly. They're making sure that, you know, teams are not running, you know, ahead of, getting an unfair advantage when it comes to the 10 metres. I believe this year there's been a total out of the 24 games of 440 penalties, which is about 18.3 a game. And I think that is up by more than double of what the average was last year. And not only just in terms of, you know, actual penalties, but the sin bins are actually absolutely phenomenal this year. I think we've had 9 sin bins already this season, and to give you an idea, 2 seasons ago the number of sin bins was actually 17. Right. Wow. So 43 players were sin bin last year, and you know, it's you know, and then we've had like, I think we've had about 9, so we've had about 3.5 players per game, per round being sin binned. So yeah, look, the sin bin counter is the number of sin bins are up, the number of penalties are up. Theoretically, I'm actually for this. I think that the game should be played, you know, fairly. I think if they do play the ball properly, if they do, you know, obviously wait until the ball actually clears the ruck before they can run up, I think it does bring the playing field closer. But at the moment, it's frustrating to watch as a viewer sometimes with so many penalties in every game.
I'd have to agree with that, Tish. And I think the thing is, I'm not against the referees clamping down on some of the basics of the game, like how to play the ball. I think we've been saying that for ages. I'm definitely not against that. I think the players need to get the message to not. It's not tunnel ball. It's rugby league. You got to play the ball. It's not tunnel ball. So things like that I accept. What is difficult to accept is, you know, already in several games, in only three rounds, we've seen quite a few situations where, again, refereeing decisions, poor refereeing decisions, are costing teams games during critical times, and really, really kind of confusing kind of penalties and things like that. But the other thing is that there are so many lopsided penalty counts or situations where teams are just getting, you know, unfavorable attention, shall we say, from referees. You know, I point to a couple of weeks ago, the Tigers match against the Storm. Well, it was only last week, sorry. Tigers match against the Storm, where the Storm, you know, received the greatest number of penalties in a game in NRL history. You know, were the Tigers that ill-disciplined? Is that a tactic? I think we talked about this last week as well.
Mm.
And I think we agreed that, no, that's not the case. It's just that, you know, perhaps the interpretation of what the Tigers are doing, you know, the referees were thinking that that's what they need to do. But in this week's, last week's game, the round three game, the Eels against the Sharks, look, a similar kind of thing happened where actually for the entire first half, I think, the Eels did not receive one penalty at all, and wow, they conceded six, I think it was. And so, you know, and can you put that down to discipline? Yeah, maybe. You know, I'm not going to go case by case through each penalty to work out if they're all warranted. But when you look at sort of the pattern of what's going on, especially when they're up against a team in the Sharks that is renowned for having discipline problems, and yet they, you know, the Sharks were not even able to concede one penalty to the Eels. It sort of makes you wonder whether, you know, not necessarily that there are biases, but how are the referees actually managing the games? Are they actually going in really hard? And you know, is one side the only side that usually understands how they're interpreting it, and the other side just doesn't get it? And gets continually penalized. I mean, who knows? What is it that's going on? Let's hear everyone else's thoughts about what's happening. Is it that some of the teams like the Tigers and the Eels, that they're actually not necessarily ill-disciplined, but they're trying to push the boundary of, I don't know, they're trying to slow the play the ball down too much? I don't have enough of a breakdown of all the penalties and in, you know, what they're for, but just anecdotally, I think there seems that people are just really already annoyed with some of the games that have been blatantly, some decisions have been blatantly incorrect. And people are just starting to question whether, you know, whether we've got the best people there making the decisions. But thankfully the NRL has acted and has acted very swiftly to sort of, you know, to show that they're kind of listening to the fans as well. Especially in, you know, the Tigers fans will be absolutely devastated about what happened. So, yeah, Tish, do you have any final thoughts on this?
No. Well, look, you know, it's a good opportunity now for the Tigers to bounce back. And, you know, we've seen them do well now. They're bouncing back against Parramatta. Let's see how they handle their first loss and how they come back from that. So, I think it's all encouraging news that we've won two out of three. So,
absolutely. Tackle number three. And there's news in the women's rugby league world. So the NRL on Tuesday, so that's today, granted licenses to Brisbane, St. George, Illawarra, the Sydney Roosters and the Warriors in a short women's league to be played later this year. So that's the good news. The bad news is that the Cronulla Sharks are crying foul, given that they, a pioneer club in women's rugby league, has been left out of the inaugural competition. So if we look at, if you know, the argument from the NRL is that the geographical, the decisions were made to include teams based on strategic geographical locations. Hence, we've got one Sydney team, Sydney Roosters, one Central Sydney team, one Brisbane team, Warriors team to account for the New Zealand sort of contingent, and St. George Illawarra, which is in kind of, you know, encompasses the Sutherland Shire. And yet there is Cronulla on its own, you know, having been one of the pioneer clubs in women's rugby league. In fact, I think the club, the home of Ruan Sims, who's a current captain of the the Gillaroos. No, what are they called? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
You know, the Australian Women's Rugby League team, let's call them. And so that's interesting. What are your thoughts on that, Tish? Do the Sharks have a reason to be annoyed that they've been left out of this momentous decision?
Well, somewhat, but I think, you know, I also think a lack of representation of Western Sydney in this inaugural women's competition. And, you know, there are women in Western Sydney as well, right? Note to the NRL. Yes. And, you know, a lot of them do support rugby league and a lot of them play rugby league. So, you know, look, I know it's just the starting point. And, you know, these four have been chosen, obviously, based on location. And I think also because, well, you can't have a women's rugby league team called the Sydney Roosters. They're obviously going to have to be the Sydney Chickens, right?
Or the Hens.
The Hens, that's right. And, you know, you'll also have to have the Brisbane, you know, female horse thing. What's that called? Mares?
The mares. Well, what's a female version of a dragon?
Well, that's where the controversy is.
The mother of dragons to bring in the Game of Thrones crowd.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well,
and what about the Warriors?
The Warriors, well, you've got Warriors, like, sort of male, and then you've got Xenas, like Xena Warrior Princess, right? So
there you go. We've just created a new set of teams. And are you listening?
Yeah, that's right. So
The Mares, the Mother of Dragons, the Hens, and the Xenas.
Yeah. So, so the Sharks, you know, a female shark is also a shark, right? So, you know, maybe they need to think and maybe change their name to sort of suit a male and female version of their team, you know? What was the suggestion that Peter Beattie had for them? Maybe that might help, but yeah.
The Hawks or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, Hawkettes. I don't know. That doesn't really work.
I don't know.
So anyway,
are you advocating, Tish, a new gender neutral league? With mascots that are actually gender neutral. Is that what you're saying?
You bring up a really good point. And we also need to cater for, how long is a piece of string in this issue, right? Like, we do need to cater for maybe gender neutral mascots so they could represent both men and women teams. That's actually a great idea. And what about, an intergender competition? Can that work?
Well, who knows? Who knows? But
But look, it's good to see the NRL get off on the wrong ground. It's good to see them get something launched, and it's also disappointing to see the Sharks using it as a way to sort of disrespect the NRL for actually moving forward. And instead of just staying quiet and letting them support them and then, you know, putting in a bid for next year sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So I'm going to leave it at that. Let's move on to tackle number four. New South Wales Blues Origin contenders. So, yes, we're only 3 weeks in, but we are in a bit of a pickle in the New South Wales Blues camp because, unfortunately, the player who was, in my view, next in line to be crowned potentially halfback for the Blues, if not this year, at least in the near future, Nathan Cleary, has been injured with a medial ligament tear, which has put him out for 10 weeks. So basically what this means is that, you know, possibly we could have Mitchell Pearce coming back in, which, you know, some people might say it's not a big deal, but, are we playing back to the future here or are we trying to move forward with our lives? But there has been, I guess it's a good opportunity to sort of think, look, who else is available? Who else is out there that we could blood, that we could rely on And so a couple of names have come up, and one of the names that, in terms of the team that's, you know, playing very well, not top of the table at the moment, but has been playing very well, it has been the Roosters, and Luke Keary is a player that has been mentioned. Even Cooper Cronk has come out and said that he's ready for Origin. What are your thoughts, Tish, on the critical 5/8 and halfback positions? And are there any other players that have sort of come out and staked their claim for inclusion in the Blues lineup?
Well, I think the race for who will be halfback or and 5/8 for the New South Wales lineup for State of Origin 2018, I think it's an open door. There is a race, and whoever wants it, they can go and take it by absolutely, you know, destroying the competition with their fantastic performances. Because I think that's what we need, right? We need a player that's absolutely in form, you know, to sort of fight their way to the top and get the chance. And, you know, do the halfbacks and 5/8s that are New South Wales orientated, New South Wales born, you know, do they actually have that mentality that they want to be the best halfback and 5/8 in the competition? You know, sometimes I think not, but I think, you know, the injured Nathan Cleary now, I think he kind of did have that temperament, right, where he just wants to be the best he could sort of be. I like Luke Keary. You know, he's sitting at the Roosters at number 3 in the competition. He's getting good mentoring from Cooper Cronk. But I think as soon as Cooper Cronk, a Queenslander, you know, is trying to pick the New South Wales team, I think that disqualifies Keary straight away, because he's obviously a puppet for Queensland.
Yeah, he's just gonna destroy him, isn't he? Once he gets into that arena,
yeah,
he's like, yeah, beauty, I've got some tricks up my sleeve, and we'll all just be shaking our heads, going, why didn't we see that one coming?
Okay.
But I tend to agree with you, but what about Mitchell Moses? I mean, Luke Brooks, like, there's a few others that have been talked about over the years. What's going on with them? Then none of them are really playing into form.
Okay, look, with Luke Brooks, he did kick the field goal to actually get the Tigers into Golden Point, and he also is the one that set up the try. But one of the criticisms you can put down to the Tigers is that they're not really a try-scoring machine at the moment. So maybe Luke Brooks, you know, he's doing better than other seasons. I think he's actually having a great season so far, but I don't think he's quite that cooked yet. Obviously, the woes, the highs and lows of the Eels at the moment, which is kind of just the lows and the lows, doesn't really...
don't talk about the Eels.
It doesn't really... if I think about the series that we won, we had Trent Hodgkinson, I think, and we had Josh Reynolds. We didn't really necessarily have the greatest set of 5/8 and halfback combinations that we've ever picked. But we had two players in form, and we had two players that were team players as opposed to individual stars. And maybe we need to sort of change the way we think about selecting the team. Maybe it's good to pick a player that, you know, kind of shows merit, not as like a superstar, set yourself up, you know, for a win sort of, but more of a sort of an organizer, somebody who sort of, you know, can sort of direct the team really good. Somebody who could be an unsung hero type halfback, and, you know, or halfback or 5/8. And one player actually comes to mind, which I don't think we've really talked about him a lot, but that's actually Blake Green of the Warriors.
Oh, okay.
Because Blake Green, you know, he had success at Manly. You know, he used to be at the Storm. Now he's at the Warriors. They're 3-3 this season, doing much better than what Foran did with the Warriors. And you know, he sort of never gets a look in. I know he's kind of more 5/8, but, you know, he seems to have a bit of a magic spark to him when he actually goes on the field. And I think having a player like that... See, not necessarily a household name, not necessarily a player that's got a lot of hype, but I think a player that will be honoured to play for New South Wales, and I think can do a job and do a great job, and it doesn't necessarily have to be setting up the winning try or anything, but it could be a player that is good at setting up, you know, the superstars like Hayne and Dugan and Tedesco to do their thing. So, but that's the... Yeah, so Keary... look, great player. You know, if I would have said yes if Cooper Cronk didn't say anything. But I also like Greeny. What about your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Blake Austin, but, you know.
Well, the Raiders haven't won a game either this season, so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. All of our options are kind of not playing very well. So, you know, this is the story of the New South Wales Blues every single year, is that, you know, we've got so many options, and yet either they're injured, they're just recently retired, or they are just playing really badly. And you wouldn't want to put them at that level because they'd never really, you know, I guess it's that Queensland spirit that we don't have. You know, they don't really step up because they know they're not really there, you know, as permanent stalwarts of the team. They're just there to fill in because others have been injured. So in that environment, you can't really get those people to sort of lift. I was kind of hoping with Nathan Cleary it would be different, that we could blood someone who's actually got a bit of a mature head on his shoulders. But, you know, and Mitchell Pearce has done Mitchell Moses has really done nothing for the last few weeks. So,
but his 2017 was fantastic. So
it was. So what's happened? You know, like just when we thought we needed him, he's done nothing for the Eels in their time of greatest need. So
yeah.
So this is something that we definitely need to think about. But
and I think dummy half is also a bit of an issue as well. I think we need to find a good dummy half as well. So lots for New South Wales and Bradfield to think about, which I'm sure he certainly is. Probably not, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I think he'd be worried, put it that way. So, all right, let's move to tackle number 5.
Sorry.
There it is there. Expansion news. So we've got 2 stories here which are very interesting. So the first one is about the NRL expansion, which is back on the cards. So a new strategic plan has been released by the NRL this week, today, in fact. And as a result of that, there's been an announcement that there is a clearer kind of pathway with kind of criteria and things that clubs need to abide by via the Queensland and New South Wales Cups for clubs to get their clubs in there. And then once they've proved viable, feasible financially and sustainable, and that they can attract the right players, then the NRL is looking to potentially look at a way to, you know, ask, you know, provide an inclusion criteria, I guess, for the NRL. However, Todd Greenberg has come out and said no new expansion will happen definitely before the new TV deal in 2023. So, again, it's been pushed out even further, even though there are regions that are crying out for rugby league and for their own rugby league or NRL team. Tish, just on this point, the NRL expansion, they're talking about a clear pathway via the second tier, New South Wales and Queensland Cups. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, look, I like the idea. I like the fact that there's some clear guidelines now as to what expansion would look like. If there is a bid for an area, a region, a team that wants to be in the NRL, that there's a pathway set up, and I think it also will put new interest into you know, these competitions, you know, and potentially, I mean, wouldn't it be exciting to have perhaps a you know, perhaps some sort of backing from you know, from rich people wanting to get into to the rugby league by trying to get a team promoted into the NRL from these competitions, which is great. But I also think that expansion can happen quicker than the TV deal. I think there is enough money in the game. Let's take a look, for instance, Manly. They've been able to pay extra salaries to 13 players. That's almost a team. So there's clearly enough money in the game. Well, Manly were able to find it. Maybe Manly should be in charge of expansion.
Well, there you go. Well, they certainly were expanding their financial books. That's right. For sure. but yeah, look, I don't agree with that last the Manly bit, but I agree with everything else you said. I think there's look, I think the pathway is good though, because it allows we've already seen the success with the PNG Hunters. We're seeing Fiji knocking on the door, and it's such a risk to put a team from sort of untested team into the NRL itself. It is a very expensive deal to run a team for a year. And so I think Todd Greenberg is right that they need to proceed with caution, but they can proceed with a roadmap at least. This is where you need to go if you want to show that your club is viable at the top level.
Absolutely.
And on that basis, you know, they're looking at things like even the PG Hunters would be possibly in contention because, well, there'd be a lot of other issues in terms of security and things like that to sort out. But, you know, the amount of success they've had on the field and the amount of new players that have been like a new market, literally, that has been opened up, you know, that ticks off that box of, you know, having the players available. You know, to be able to have the financials, again, I don't know the situation there, but the support, yes, tick, they've got that. They've shown that they can get a lot of support from their home crowd, but also from the Queensland crowd. So that's an example of if Fiji wanted to do the same thing, they need to sort of strategically sort of latch on to a New South Wales Cup kind of, you know, presence and then prove that it's working and prove that there is an audience, prove that there are players available. But, yeah, the NRL needs to be clearer in my view, and this is my final thought on this. They need to be a lot clearer on what are the actual criteria for inclusion into the NRL. It's all well and good to say, you can start a second-tier club and then we'll see how we go and, oh, you'll be judged on these things, but how exactly – will they be judged? And when, you know, what point do they say you pass all the criteria, you know, Perth Reds, but you just don't pass our, you know, we have the power of veto to say, look, it's not strategic enough at the moment, a decision, so we're not going to expand. And that's really difficult. And some people are calling for the NRL to say, look, why don't you just open it up as a campaign and say, we're going to expand. We need two teams. Go for it.
Yeah,
that's kind of what the ARL did many, many years ago when it turned from New South Wales Rugby League to ARL.
Look, if you're a like North Sydney Bears, if you're like a, you know, a community that wants their own rugby league team, you know, maybe you should try crowdfunding, right, to get into the NRL. Maybe go on Shark Tank, pitch your idea,
a Kickstarter program.
Yeah, and maybe the NRL can have their own Shark Tank to get the viability of teams, you know what I mean? And we could have, you know, a Shark Tank of the NRL. That'd be a great idea.
Yeah, and my final thought on this is that, you know, if you really want to, you can sponsor a Parramatta Eel player. They're in desperate need of support and self-esteem. Please donate as much as you can. Yep. Every 5 seconds, Parramatta gives away a penalty. So you really need to dig deep into your pockets. Anyway, sorry.
We need pens and rule books.
That's right. And a clue. Potentially a clue. Another bit of expansion news, and Tish, you know more about this than me, but England and New Zealand are set to play, is it later this year, in Denver, Colorado, USA?
Yeah, I believe it's June 23rd in Denver.
And what's the latest on that?
Well, the latest is that Wayne Bennett, who doesn't like to say a lot, but has actually come out and said that the English, Australian-based English players that will participate in the game are all very keen and are all on board to actually be playing for England for this game. And because, you know, a lot has come out about this game being on in sort of halfway through the season sort of thing. And, you know, a lot of NRL clubs are kind of against it. But Wayne Bennett has come out and said that he's spoken to his, you know, Australian-based players, and they're all keen on representing England against New Zealand in Denver. So I think well done on both England and New Zealand for actually setting up, you know, rugby league in England, rugby league in the USA. You know, there is lots of talk out there that there is, you know, there's murmurs of a new competition to sort of rival the American football. You know, some startup ideas are going down. And I think the NRL getting into the USA, Rugby League USA, I think it does have a chance. So we need to play more games in that continent. And it'd be good to see England and New Zealand, two top teams. Well, one top team and one team that I think needs Benji Marshall. But but it'd be great to see. And Mile High Stadium, I believe it's I think it's like at least a thousand miles above sea level. It's actually a very high altitude sort of stadium that they're playing in. So it would be interesting how you know that type of atmosphere, how the players will go. So hopefully big success rugby league in Denver.
Excellent. All right, moving on to our final tackle number 6, which is our tips. So look, last week you got 4 out of 8. I've got 3 out of 8. That brings our total to yours to 14 and mine to 9. So I'm way behind already. I've done only 3 rounds. Let's get into the round 4 matches, the Easter round. So that may play a part. So Cowboys versus Panthers. Interesting one. I'm tipping the Cowboys purely because unfortunately Cleary is out.
Yeah, look, I think the Panthers have been showing better form than the Cowboys, and this will be a big game for them, so I'm picking the Panthers to produce an upset, but I don't think it's really that big of an upset. But anyway, yeah, Panthers.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Rabbitohs versus Bulldogs, the traditional Good Friday clash, and I'm going for the Rabbitohs.
Ooh, look, I am going against you again on this one. I'm going to tip the Bulldogs, big win against the Panthers. And I think that they want to, two from two, and Dean Pay is going to have his side ready to do that.
Sharks versus Storm, I'm tipping an upset for no reason other than I don't want Melbourne to win, so I'm tipping the Sharks.
Okay, well, look, we agree to disagree third time in a row here. Look, the Storm, very professional outfit. The Sharks yet to win a game. They start slow, and, you know, the Storm's just going to professionalize them.
Roosters versus Warriors. I'm tipping an upset. The Warriors.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, look, it's a home game for both. Both teams, as there's lots of New Zealanders that live in Bondi.
That's right.
But you know what? The Roosters showing good form. I'm tipping the Roosters to beat the undefeated Warriors.
That's right. Of course, I should probably add, every game is a home game for Roosters fans because they all stay at home and don't ever go to the games. But anyway, that's another thing. Seagulls versus Raiders. So a replay of the 1987 grand final with a different result, I fear. The Raiders, I think, will capitalize on the Seagulls being all at sea with internal turmoil. So the Raiders will win this one.
Okay. Look, this is like the third or fourth season in the Ricky Stewart Raiders thing, so they're on a downward spiral, and I think that will continue. The Seagulls at home at Lotterland, you know, lots of controversy this week. You know, they're going to be fired up, and will destroy the Raiders, I think.
The Dragons versus the Knights in the Battle of Camelot.
Yep.
Sorry, I don't know. The Dragons, for mine, will continue their winning ways.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, the thing is, the interesting, I don't know if you looked at the Dragons logo, but it's actually, I think, a knight trying to slay a dragon.
Well, it's a dragon slayer. That's what they originally were called, but anyway. Yeah.
Okay, well, I think they will be... Yeah, look, I'm tipping the Dragons. Let's agree to agree on this one.
Broncos versus Titans. Look, I don't think the Titans will win after what I saw. So the Broncos will
I agree with you. I don't think I don't think after last week's performance, I don't think the Titans can win anything. But I'm tipping the Broncos on this one.
And we're going to go back to disagreeing on this one. The wonderful Good Monday. What do they call it? The Easter Monday clash. Not Good Monday. Easter Monday clash. Tigers versus Eels. Traditionally, and by tradition I mean it's only been operating for the last 5 years or so. We see some pretty great football between these two teams on Easter Monday. I'm tipping the Eels, of course. I don't even need to ask you, Tish. You're going to tip the Tigers. I think I know that for sure.
Of course I am, but it's good to see, you know, the Easter show is going to be on Monday. It's a public holiday. Good to see these two teams battling it out. And great to see the NRL last week on the opening day of the Easter show to have a doubleheader at ANZ, and this game's also going to be at ANZ. I hope they get a big crowd, and I also hope the Tigers can bounce back And I think they will need to if they want to make the top eight this year. This is a must-win game for the Tigers, but a very much a must-win game for the Eels as well. So very, very intriguing round four coming up, and can't wait to see the results from the other side.
That's right. And look, that wraps up our podcast. Thank you very much for listening to us. Don't forget to catch us on our website, rrepublic.com. Send us an email, rrepublic@gmail.com. If you have any ideas of what we, what you want to talk, what you want us to talk about, and just anything at all, send us a line, give us some feedback. Don't forget to catch us on iTunes. Subscribe, download, leave a comment and a review on any of our podcast episodes and on our page there. Have I missed anything? Oh, Facebook, of course. Don't forget to like us. Find us and like us on Facebook so that you can keep track of when we drop our podcasts and, shake and rattle the cages of the NRL and the rugby league world every week, once a week, when we do this great podcast. Tish, over to you to wrap this one up.
Well, thank you, Dr. T. And look, thank you, everybody, for listening to this edition of the Rugby League Republic. We enjoyed doing it, and I hope you guys enjoyed listening to it. But unfortunately, that's all the time that we have on this episode of the Rugby League Republic. Please join us next time on the Rugby League Republic. Bye for now.